Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowatz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and he's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, David. It's been so long since we talked.
It seems like just moments ago.
Yes.
today, I want to talk with you about recent developments in tax increment financing.
Ah, yes. My favorite subject.
With respect to a couple of your recent articles, but first, a TIF primer for the uninitiated. Give me the one-sentence description of tax increment financing in the city of Chicago.
This description has evolved over years, as you know, but I've now got it down to this. TIF is a surcharge on top of the property tax that you pay, and instead of going to schools and parks, the money is sent to slush funds controlled by the mayor.
And it occurs in special TIF districts that can be as small as a block or as large as a square half mile?
Well, now we're adding a dimension to it, but the important point for our listeners to know is that everybody pays the surcharge, regardless of whether you live in the area where the TIF money will be spent. So no matter where a TIF district exists, you, even if you don't live in that TIF district, pay the extra property taxes.
Because the thing you call the surcharge, or what some call the increment, even though it's paid only within the TIF district, the rest of the taxpayers have to make up for that shortfall, which are being skimmed off
that's
of the property
surcharge.
Taxes. Yeah.
The surcharge is what everybody else has to pay to accommodate for the money that the schools aren't getting from the TIF district.
And the law,
the
state law that created TIF districts, tax increment financing, meant for this financing to stimulate development in places that would not otherwise get development, so therefore creating more economic activity and therefore raising property taxes as property values go up.
Absolutely
correct. And it's an investment in future property taxes. Right.
So the idea behind a TIF is to invest property taxes today so that you have greater growth tomorrow. And it's a solid principle. Can't argue with the principle. It's just how it's been practiced in the city of Chicago.
And listeners, you can go back to previous interviews about tax increment financing that we've done to hear more about how it's not working that way.
Or how it is working.
Let's talk now about two of your recent articles, one that appeared in The Reader on October 24th, 2013, titled, How to Irritate Mayor Emanuel and Do Some Legislating in One Easy Step.
Oh, yeah.
You write of an October rally at which 11 aldermen were asked if they'd support a proposed TIF surplus ordinance, among other things, and all said yes to that question, all 11.
Yeah.
The proposed ordinance, drafted by Alderman Robert Fioretti of the 2nd Ward and Scott Wagaspek of the 32nd, says that the city would give the TIF revenues that are not, quote, already required or, quote, pledged for specific projects to the taxing bodies to which they would have gone if not for the corresponding TIF districts. Again, for the uninitiated, these tax revenues that are skimmed off in the TIF districts accumulate in TIF funds. And according to the citizens group, Civic Lab, there's an estimated $1.7 billion surplus of those funds.
Yes.
The Emanuel administration, on the other hand, says that $1.5 billion of the surplus is already, quote, committed, unquote, but it won't release any details about how the funds are committed.
Take our word for it, accounting. Yeah.
So the administration essentially maintained that most of this money is not, in fact, a surplus, but merely unspent.
That is correct. But targeted to be spent.
So then the administration agreed to release what it considers the actual surplus, $49 million, to the taxing bodies that would have gotten it.
This is very funny listening to you recite this. Yes, it's true.
And then there's another article you wrote recently, appeared on November 21st, 2013, titled, Our Aldermen, at least a few of them, finally challenged the mayor on TIFs! Exclamation mark. In this article, you write about the city council meeting of November 13th, 2013, at which aldermen from the Progressive Reform Coalition introduced a motion to discharge the proposed TIF surplus ordinance from where it had stalled in the Rules Committee to the floor of the City Council for consideration. The Rules Committee is chaired by 8th Ward Alderman Michelle Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Just some background on this. A couple of months ago, the Progressive Reform Coalition of Aldermen crafted a draft ordinance that they introduced to the City Council that would essentially charge, I guess it would be the Department of Housing and Economic Development, to examine whether this unspent money that we talked about is actually committed in any way. And if it's not, then it should be given to the taxing bodies to which it never went
right. When
it was skimmed from the TIF districts. That ordinance was immediately sent to the Rules Committee,
right,
where it's languished for a couple of months.
More than a couple.
Yeah. And 30 aldermen had originally signed on as co-sponsors of that proposed ordinance. So on paper, the motion, the recent motion to discharge the ordinance from the committee seemed like it could fly, but that's not what happened. Only 11 aldermen voted for the motion. Now, these aren't the same 11 as were questioned in the rally we talked about.
No, there were a
couple of variations.
Yeah, there was a couple of variations. So Alderman Wilburns of the 4th Ward was at that rally, and he assured the people at the rally that he endorsed the TIF surplus ordinance. But when it came time to vote to discharge it from the Rules Committee, he voted against that. Whereas Michelle Smith, who was not at that rally, so we didn't know what her position was back then, voted to discharge. So it was buried in rules, and this is a trick the Daily had. Mayor Rahm picked up on unwanted legislation, have it dumped in rules where it'll never be heard from again. It won't even be a hearing. We have to go back in time to when the ordinance was introduced in July, and that was in the midst of yet another round of budget cuts at the public schools, which followed the closing of schools, and you know, teachers are being fired. There wasn't money for supplies. We talked about all this. And meanwhile, not only is there this billions of dollars sitting in the TIF surplus, but there's money for the boondoggle and the South Loop that we've talked about many times, the basketball arena for DePaul. So the aldermen were in an embarrassing position. How do you justify cutting school funding when you have this money sitting in surplus? And I give credit to the reformers and the activists who brought attention to this. Usually it's just people like you and me talking about it, but this was getting widespread discussion. And so in response, aldermen, trying to look good, signed on to this ordinance that would effectively take money out of TIF slush funds and give it back to the schools from where it came, essentially, so that they could hire back some of the teachers they fire and maybe bring an art class or two or buy some toilet paper. And then the mayor quickly let them know that he didn't want this discussed, that this is what he considers his money. He wants to spend it where he wants. Money is power. He wants to control the power. And so it was locked into rules. And Alderman Harris made it clear to the other aldermen that she wasn't going to hold a hearing on it anytime soon.
Alderman Harris, who is chairwoman of the Rules Committee.
That is correct, who replaced Alderman Mel, who played the same role for years. Anyway, so what Wagasback and Fioretti did was to embarrass their colleagues by invoking Rule 41, which is a parliamentary rule that says any two aldermen can bring a matter out of rules after 60 days, I believe it is.
That's right.
And so they brought it to the floor, and the vote was on technically, should we
discharge
this from committee? What Wagasback and Fioretti and the others did was very embarrassing to their colleagues. They called her bluff. And, you know, the howling and the yelping that went from the embarrassed aldermen who were caught.
I want to talk about that in some detail.
Yeah.
It's during what they call debate in the city council,
yes,
that this yelping took on. Many aldermen made speeches,
mm-hmm,
mostly against the motion,
yes,
to
correct,
discharge the proposed ordinance from committee. And I'll characterize the speeches as of two types, as I see it.
Yes.
In the first, aldermen extolled the virtues of tax increment,
yes,
financing, and
good,
they gave laundry lists of projects in their wards that it funded,
very,
and why
good,
it was so important to them.
Yes.
And in the second type, aldermen accused the ordinance's proponents of playing politics and of unprincipled,
yes,
behavior. And I want to play a couple excerpts from those speeches. But first of all, making speeches of the first type about the virtues of TIF were quite a rogues gallery. Southside Alderman Dowell of the 3rd, Harris of the 8th, and Thomas of the 17th. Westside Alderman Burnett of the 27th and Irvin of 28th. And on the north side, we have Alderman Suarez of the 31st. Let's listen to one of those from Alderman Harris.
So I say to my colleagues who want to push for surplus, where do we get the surplus from? We get it from that, and then my schools go, we can't pay the bond on the schools. Is that fair to children across the city? That we're going to take money away from, we made a commitment to build these schools in our community, and now they're there and we're saying we don't want to pay them. We want to take all the money and surplus it. And that's not fair.
So this sort of thing is interesting to me for two reasons. One is to see how passionately these South and West Side, mm-hmm, aldermen,
yeah,
felt about the economic impacts of tax increment financing, which you've argued they have enjoyed the least of.
Absolutely.
And secondly, whether the administration sort of lined them all up to make these speeches to defend the unspent TIF money. So what are your reactions?
Well, my reaction is the aldermen, usually in these matters, get talking points from the administration. So most of these aldermen are reciting talking points. They didn't even need the talking points because they know them so well. My point about the TIF program, well, there's many points, but one is if you take pretty much all the discretionary money that the city has, that is money that's not dedicated to pay for police or for some very specific service like police or fire or schools, and you put all that money, all that discretionary money into one pot under the control of the mayor, then the mayor controls everything. He who controls the money controls everything. So if an alderman wants money for, let's say, a school in his or her district, and the only available source of money under the system we have now is the TIF fund, they have to come to the mayor and say, please give me some TIF money for a school. The mayor gives them the money, and they're sworn allies to this bizarre TIF program. That's the whole point of this thing. That's how the mayor holds on to the power that he has. There's so many different issues raised here. One is that there's got to be a better way to apportion discretionary economic development money, fairly apportion it, to do it without waste, to make sure that we're really helping poor neighborhoods that desperately need it, that we're not giving money to wealthy developers who don't need the money, as is often the case. In terms of schools, to see that it's being fairly distributed so that, let's say, Peyton's not getting an addition, which it doesn't really need, which Peyton's a very high-achieving school in the north side, as opposed to an overcrowded school in the northwest side.
Let me stop you there. When you say there must be a better way...
It has to be, yes.
I'm wondering whether you don't have to invent anything.
No.
Is that we have, in the city of Chicago, we have a budget process,
that is
right?
Correct. There
Chicago
is a better
Public
way,
School,
yeah.
The Chicago Board of Education has a budget process. So both those things that you named, one targeting... economic development in neighborhoods can be done by the existing Department of Housing and Economic Development within the city's
budget.
And likewise for the Board of Education, they have people who do infrastructure planning. For Christ's sake, they have a 10-year infrastructure plan.
Yes.
You know, so why do you need an outside funding mechanism?
You need it to give the mayor more power than he has. In the mid-90s, Mayor Daley realized that this was a way for him to take complete control over all the discretionary funding that the city had. He figured that out. Give him credit for it, okay? It was one of his, I'd say, his greater invention than Millennium Park.
It's about Mayor Daley now.
Mayor Daley, yes. Mayor Rahm got into office, figured it out, and said, no way, I'm giving this up. And so the aldermen are his patsies. You know, Alderman Harris on the south side, sure, her ward doesn't get as much money as Alderman Burnett's ward gets. So why would she be defending a program that works to the disadvantage of her constituents? She should be fighting the program. She should be joining Dave and Ben fighting the program. Instead, she's defending the program.
Attention, Alderman Harris.
Alderman Beal in the ninth ward. His ward gets bupkas out of this deal. He should be fighting the program. The 15th ward, the 17th ward, almost all the poor black wards on the south and far west side, Alderman Irvin's ward, they're not getting their fair share of this program. I can understand why Alderman Dowell and Alderman Burnett, who come from gentrifying wards, would defend it because by virtue of the flaws in the program, they get more money. But it makes no sense for Alderman Harris to defend a program that works to the detriment of her ward and works to the benefit of Alderman Burnett's ward. It's another crazy thing that we do here in the city of Chicago. We defend programs that don't work for the benefit of the people. So you're right. There were two strands of argument. One, which is the blind defense of this flawed system that's unsustainable and works to the detriment of poor neighborhoods, even though it's a program that's intended to help poor neighborhoods. So there's that blind defense. And the other was what I call the yelping, which was directed by embarrassed aldermen at the independents who called their bluff.
Let's talk about that. The people who accused the progressive aldermen of playing politics and unprincipled behavior in speeches were, on the north side, Alderman Moreno of the 1st Ward, Alderman Pouar, your alderman, the 47th.
Thank you, my alderman.
And on the south side, Alderman Dowell,
yes.
We mentioned earlier, Alderman Burns of the 4th, and Alderman Thomas of the 17th. And let's listen to a few of those accusations. Let's start with Alderman Dowell.
I joined other people who wanted to pass this ordinance, in order to sign this ordinance, in order to put pressure on you, Mr. Mayor, to declare a tax surplus to mitigate the CPS budget cuts. And I have to say that I'm glad that shortly after this ordinance was passed, you did declare TIF surplus, and this TIF surplus has resulted in $25 million in additional funding to the Chicago Public Schools. Now, the only way to view the administration's TIF surplus is as a victory by the ordinance's sponsors. But rather than declare victory and move on to other issues, the ordinance chief sponsors have decided to double down and have asked this body to pass this ordinance.
Which is incorrect. This motion was not to pass the ordinance.
She actually voted, by the way, to discharge.
She did.
Yes.
She's very surprising.
Yeah.
She was saying that she was not going. So maybe it was just to appease the mayor.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to Alderman Burns now.
So why have we come to this moment? We have come to this moment because some political actors in this city seek to create an artificial conflict to serve their own political ends.
That was very short and sweet. Let's go finally to Alderman Pouwar, who was rather adamant. And this is a rather lengthy comment, but I think it's worth listening to.
There are some in this chamber that seem to think that their signature is more important than everyone else's signature who signed on to it, or that somehow you care more about your schools and the schools in the city of Chicago than we care about our schools. And as aldermen, we all know that's not true. We all care deeply about all of our schools. But when I put my signature on something, I take it seriously, you know, when you sign any ordinance into law, because I believe that I should be a part of the process in drafting and understanding how the law or the ordinance impacts people in my community, but also engaging stakeholders. Today, you are stripping me, my colleagues, of the ability to participate in creating meaningful and critically important legislation and asking me to simply sign away and give my vote to you under pressure. Simply put, you're throwing my signature back into my face. You have not done the work to build coalitions. You have not called your colleagues. You have not held briefings. You have not come to us and say, listen, let's work together to put something together. Instead, what you're doing, instead of working and engaging your colleagues to understand how this rough draft of the ordinance impacts all of us in our communities and all of Chicago, you've turned your ordinance into a pledge. In the same way that Grover Norquist forces Tea Partiers to sign a pledge and then holds it over their head and says, you need to vote this way, regardless of what's actually happening. So my signature is my vote and my promise to my constituents that I've worked and understood the impacts of a law, and I've understood how it impacts people in my community and everyone else around the city. But sadly, you've cut us out of that process and politicized what I thought originally was a really really important piece of reform legislation.
Ben is making a gesture, which I won't.
Yes.
Yeah. Pouwar, like others, speaks as if they were debating passage of the ordinance, not a motion to move it from the committee to the council such debate, which is, you know, interesting. He also says that the sponsoring aldermen didn't work hard enough to build support for the vote, for this vote, before introducing it. What do you think about those two things?
Well, first of all, I think he's wounded and embarrassed, probably more than anybody, because, as you know, Amaya Pouwar ran as a TIF reformer. That's what made him such a delightfully appealing candidate to me and others. Myself, I'm a little embarrassed by it, how intrigued I was by his candidacy. And he articulated many of the flaws and deficiencies of the TIF program, and he articulated that it was a program that we can't continue. He led everybody to believe that if he went to the city council, he would not be there as sort of a typical player in this operation, but he would be there as an independent voice that would speak out against these deficiencies. So when he got to the city council, he became a player. So essentially, he took the TIF money that he had coming for his ward, used it on his schools, pleased his people, which is the typical Chicago way, and turned his back on this larger issue of what's good for the whole city, sort of the global issue of TIFs. And now he's wounded and embarrassed that they called him out on it. He tried to have it two ways. He not only signed on to the TIF proposal that Wagsback and Fioretti introduced back in July, but he appeared at a press conference with other Northside legislators, state reps, calling on the city to spend TIF money, surplus money, on the schools. Again, let's go back in time to when this TIF surplus ordinance was introduced. We were in July in the midst of yet another round of budget cuts that have really crippled the schools. Things have changed, obviously. You know, the crisis has passed. Those headlines have faded. But the issue is still as relevant as ever. So he's upset because they're embarrassing him.
So he's just squirming under the spotlight? Is that what's going on?
I think if I were his advisor, I would have just sat there. You know, if you're not going to stand with your brothers and sisters in this cause, then don't do anything. Instead, he tried to turn it around and make it look as though the reformers were doing something wrong and likened them to Tea Party and Grover Norquist, which is absurd. You signed on to it. If you didn't believe in it, you shouldn't have signed on to it. And furthermore, you should have been working with them to get Michelle Harris to hold a hearing on it. The real issue here is that the mayor, when he wants to get rid of embarrassing legislation that is attempting to eradicate flaws in our government, dumps it into the Rules Committee, and the city council looks the other way. They sign on to the measure to appease the people in their district who want reform, and they do nothing to enact the reform. He's a co-sponsor. When you sign on to legislation, you have effectively become a co-sponsor. So you're as much responsible for that ordinance as Wagersback and Fioretti.
He has, in fact, said as much. He said when he puts his name to something,
that's right.
He's
put your name to it. You know, so you should have been bugging Michelle. Michelle, when are we going to have the hearing? If he thought it was flawed ordinance, he either shouldn't have signed on to it, or he should have tried to amend the language. I was disappointed with Amaya Pawar and Will Burns because they come from wards that are very middle class and lean independent. The traditional argument of aldermen is that if they take a strong stand against a powerful mayor, he'll punish their wards by cutting services. I've heard that for so many years since I moved to this town in 81. But I think it's pretty much clear that, first of all, I don't believe that anyway. But secondly, in a middle-class ward like the one Pawar represents and the one that Burns represents, there's a sense of entitlement from the people and their services aren't going to be cut. They never cut services for Leon Dupre in the 5th Ward in all those years, and they never in the 43rd Ward when Marty Oberman. So it's a bogus argument anyway. So it's disappointing that the aldermen from around Hyde Park and Kenwood and the aldermen from North Center and Ravenswood would abandon this really essential, important issue and would turn against the people who are advocating it.
What about this idea that Pawar introduces that the progressives who were behind this ordinance that they want to discharge from committee did not lay the groundwork for this vote, that they didn't go around and say to guys, hey, Amayo, you know, we're going to call this at the November 13th meeting. Can we get your support on this?
There's two issues. One, they went to everybody and said, will you sign on to this ordinance to begin with?
Original,
and people signed on.
But I'm talking about this go-around.
So this go-around, they had to, by law, file a motion of sorts or paper with the city clerk tipping their hand that the Rule 41 challenge was coming. They did that on Thursday. I think the meeting was on a Wednesday. They did that like a
previous week.
So everybody knew. That's why the mayor's aldermanic allies were ready with their prepared statements and their talking points.
They had time.
The mayor was ready for it. If Alderman Pawar wanted to say, you're embarrassing me, please don't do this, he could have.
I'm flipping it around. He's saying that they didn't approach him and say, all right, what can we do to get you to support this? He's essentially saying, you didn't reach out to me, you didn't reach out to other people to get them behind it. You just sprung it on us, and you're looking for political theater here.
Well, I agree with that. They are looking for political theater. And I agree it's completely political, absolutely. The whole TIF program is political.
But what if they wanted it to pass?
Well, it's not going to pass in the face. This is the point. It's not going to pass if Mayor Rahm doesn't want it to pass. That's why I got dumped in rules in the first place.
So do you think the progressives, that when they went to make this motion to discharge it from the Rules Committee, that they had no intention of it passing?
No. They knew it wouldn't pass.
To discharge it.
I dealt with this in a previous column that we didn't talk about. What do you as a progressive or an independent or whatever you are, a reformer, do in the face of this kind of stonewalling? When they take legislation that your colleagues, a majority of your colleagues that they support, dump it in rules and leave it there to die, what do you do? I advocate, I believe, and this is, I guess, where I disagree with Amaya Pawar, that you make an issue out of it. You let the whole city know what the situation is, where people stand, what the stakes are. TIFs happens to be a very important issue because it represents $450 to $500 million a year, half of which could go to the public schools, which are dead broke. So people should know. I think the public should know about this program. People in the 8th Ward, Michelle Harris's ward, should not be ignorant about this program. They should realize the way this program's set up, they're getting the raw end of the deal. 9th Ward voters, Anthony Beale's ward, they should know that this TIF program, year in and year out, deprives them of money that they would otherwise be getting or should be getting.
Well, if they listen to the aldermen's speeches, they would not be getting that message because the aldermen are not giving that message.
Right, the aldermen are not giving. But what you do, every time you have a public debate of this kind, you force the mainstream media to cover it, which they don't usually cover, let's be honest, Dave. You force aldermen to talk about it. They'd rather not talk about it. You force the mayor to comment on it. You bring it to the public's attention. I was sort of being a wise guy when I wrote that thing, but you and I talked about our six-year anniversary of talking about TIFs. This is the first time in those 6 years that the city council has anything remotely resembling a meaningful debate on TIFs, even though I think you agree with me that it's an extremely important program in the total scheme of Chicago. To use their word, it's an incremental change. It's just sort of like a different way of getting the public to come face to face with how their city works. So yeah, of course the aldermen were resistant. They don't want the public to know this stuff. They just want to be able to get the money, cut their deals with the mayor, have the ribbon cutting ceremony, and not worry about whether money intended for poor neighborhoods goes to rich neighborhoods. Not worry that money that is intended to help the schools at a time they're broke goes to developers on the South Loop for the DePaul deal. They just don't want the public to know about it. In good times, when the economy's booming and we're having ribbon-cutting ceremonies for Millennium Park, the public really doesn't care. But these are not good times. The schools just faced severe cuts. The pressure from the public to do something about those cuts was so strong that the Maya Pawar, Will Burns, Pat Dowell, all these aldermen and these state reps signed on to proposals to take money out of the TIF slush fund and spend it on the schools. They took an inadequate amount of money, I would say. We don't even know how much money is really in those reserves. We don't know how much money is committed. All we know is that the mayor says $1.5 billion is committed. He won't show us. He won't give an accounting of it. Anyway, that's my response to Amaya and Will Burns and Pat Dowell. Pat Dowell voted for it. And Joe Marino voted for it.
Maya Pawar is no longer a member of the Progressive Reform Coalition. Is that correct? He was an original member.
He was, yes. He dropped out, or I don't know. He is no longer a member. That is correct. Is it actually the Progressive Reforms? I didn't know the reform was in there. I thought it was a Progressive Caucus.
Yeah, it's on their website that way. Okay. They do refer to themselves as the caucus sometimes.
Yes.
You know, when they're speaking ex cathedra. There's a final point, which I think is interesting, made by Alderman Cardenas. He has a point about why it might not be a good idea to give the surplus back to the taxing bodies. Here's what he said.
Think about this. You've built up your cash reserves to reinvest. Now, there's a lot of pent-up demand. People are shy right now. But you're ready, you're set to be able to greenlight a project that may need TIF funds. But because someone pressured you into making a bad decision, you decided to give it all back.
I think he's talking about investors and developers being shy and not moving quickly on projects. But he's saying that I think the surplus is there and ready to jump. Like, say, if we needed it in February, if you get rid of it all in December, then that money is not going to be there for projects waiting in the wings. What's wrong with that argument?
I would say there's a far greater, more immediate need for that money with our public schools than any project that may or may not come down the road in the future. Furthermore, the projects that are online right now aren't worthy of the TIF dollars to begin with. So if you just keep all this money in reserve in the slush fund with the idea that someday you may need it, I think that encourages the city to make some really bad investments. And the most obvious one is the one that's going on with Alderman Cardenas's approval and every other alderman's approval in the South Loop, where we've committed close to $100 million, probably more when it's all said and done. You and I rode through the area for this bizarre entertainment district. I really don't think there's any legitimate justification for the current Chicago TIF program other than the one that was given to me years ago, and I've shared this with you, I know, by an unnamed budget official in the Daley administration who said that the people don't want to believe that it costs as much money as it costs to run government, so it's better to have this secret program so we can mislead them. So every justification to continue the program the way it is merely a justification to mislead the public. And it's being made by an administration that says its number one priority is transparency. If the city wants to have an economic development pot from which they could finance projects in various wards, they should set that up and have it part of the regular budget.
Like we were discussing earlier.
Right, we were discussing earlier. They shouldn't have to do a shadow tax and a shadow budget, which leads to some of the worst impulses we have in the city of Chicago, as evidenced by our conversation the last time with the Park Grill in Millennium Park. This is a city that doesn't do very well with secret budgets. and shadow taxes.
Who does?
Yes, right. Who does? Yes.
So I've got time for Ben. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, we welcome your comments and questions. You can send them via email to comment@shygov.com. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.